Approaching on a 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. On at 15 seconds, guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff, 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
I sent them to you to Desta. Those guys that are calling in the UFOs, what were they called? From George Knapp's website?
Oh, summoners.
The summoners. Did you see that?
I saw the little thing that he talked about. Now, is he talking about Robert Bingham in LA, or is it somebody else?
No, there's three guys. One guy's got a Harvard degree, and the one guy's filming in San Diego. And I'm going to try to get a hold of him because we've got a triangle book coming out within the next couple of days. And the guy says this is his best film, and he's filming away. He's got a camera. He describes the camera and everything he's got. And it's just sort of like a double blob of light in plain daylight. And all of a sudden out comes these little orbs start coming out of this thing, and it forms a triangle. And this triangle goes flying off. And then it's like, if you've ever seen the Mexican ones from 1991, where the thing is going along and the little things are falling out like babies coming out, you know, they're just, and he's got one of these things. And I was like, wow. I mean, it's kind of interesting to watch. I want to try to get the triangle. Cause I think he said he had two other triangles that he had filmed, but when you get the triangle book ready to go, I go, holy cow. Yes, I can get this photograph.
It's already posted, but I can add to it.
I've got the story. I just need the photograph. Allow us to use that photograph, because that was pretty bizarre. And then these three lights from the triangle all sort of form a long straight line, and then they just sort of sail off into the sky. And this is it's pretty impressive whatever these guys are doing. And they claim that they can bring these things in, that they were trained how to do this, and they do it in parks in LA. And the one guy's got a degree from Harvard. It's just bizarre. Anyway. Look on his website and check that out. It's worth watching. It's 30 minutes long.
I never even heard of this. It's on George Knapp's Twitter page.
Yeah, on the his, what is it called? His YouTube site.
It's not the Black Vault.
It's something like that. It's mysterious.
Oh, you sent it to me. I didn't know that was George Knapp.
It's called The Summoners. There's three guys that he interviews, and they're all summoning these things. It's like a CE5, but they do it a little bit differently. They talk about how they're able to bring this thing in, and it's kind of interesting. And the one guy had one underwater. He's talking about having one underwater. This guy, he went to Greece and had this experience underwater. He tried the protocol there. So, but that's the whole thing. Like, I'm now doing the one with the Toronto thing, this whole thing about how much do we actually, is there actually an observable world out there, or are we producing what we see? And that's with, I'm just done a lot of work now on that Philip experiment, the ghost experiment that was done in Toronto, and it was done by a second group in Toronto. And then it was done, I heard it was done in Scotland. It was done in Australia, where the people make up a ghost, and then they go to the table and they make this thing appear and, you know, start answering and stuff. And then you start to go like, you know, is there actually, Einstein said, is there actually a moon behind you when you're not looking? Or are we actually manifesting all this stuff? Because when you see this summoner thing, that's exactly what these guys are doing. They're manifesting this stuff where they look at the sky for like 2 minutes. He looks at the exact spot in the sky, and then he says, boop, it just appears exactly where he's looking. He brings it in, and they do this meditation thing, and fascinating. We want to try to get an interview with these guys, but the one with the triangle, when I saw that triangle one, I went, wow, whether the story is true or not, it's like the one of the best triangle photographs I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always thought that, you know, the fact that we may be manifesting this stuff, that may be part of it. I've always thought that from day one.
Yeah. You know, that's Yeah, because what I was doing just now is I was actually looking at the thing where we believe it's ETs, and I'm just doing a lot of study now on the whole airship sighting where they crashed the one in Texas, and they were told they were from Mars, and there's these wooden ships. And 1876 was the first one. So they say they had these big light that was shining down on the ground. Well, they didn't have light. The light wasn't patented until 3 years later. The battery wasn't patented until 1901. And they have these lights on there, and they say we're from Mars. And so the question is, do we actually believe that these wooden ships came flying in from Mars? And it's like, and it was the whole thing was at the development, when we developed the atomic bomb, they came in. And this time I looked at all the inventions of the telephone, the light bulb, the internal combustion engine, called it the Gilded Age, all these inventions. And that's when these things started to appear, and these wooden ships, and it makes no sense whatsoever. Because Melinda Lessie was upset. I posted something about lucid dreaming being people, some of this may be lucid dreaming. And she said, people ignore the physical evidence. Well, there's a lot of physical evidence in 1895 and 6 and 7. But what does that physical evidence mean? I mean, are you actually saying that they actually, because at that time, that, or the other thing was they discovered the canals in 1888, this guy with the telescope, and they started to believe Mars had this stuff. And so you see it, it's playing into our belief system, and it's almost like the phenomena changes as we go along. And now you have these guys manifesting these things during the day and filming them, and you guys are getting stuff, and it's almost like there's an interaction that they're, you know, we are a big part of what we're seeing around us, and we're sort of denying that.
Yeah, I know. It raises way more questions than answers. The more we dig into this, just the more we realize we don't know. And, you know, it's kind of like the animal study in the zookeeper, right?
Or I always refer to it like the whole thing that we believe we've got all the answers, when in fact we were making a bunch of false assumptions. Like 1492, it would have made sense to believe that the world was flat. Because until you put astronauts out and you go and sail out into the ocean and do all this other stuff, until you have that extra information, the more information you get, the more you realize that that's not really true. But it makes sense. It looks like it's flat, and you can put levels around the ground and stuff like that. And it's this idea that we're making a bunch of assumptions, that the more evidence you get, the more you realize the assumptions you're making aren't as accurate as you think they were. That you're just assuming because it looks that way. So it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
Rob, it's frozen up.
Uh-oh. I thought he was just smiling.
He is smiling. Yeah. Mark's still here? Mark is here. I can see Mark moving. He was stunned at my story. He just froze.
It was too much information. Yeah, but that's true. I never thought about that part you're saying about the manifesting is... Oh, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone and came back. Yeah.
He always has a prop. Oh, that was quick.
Okay, you're back. Welcome back.
Yeah, that's another down. That's it. Let me make sure this is still recording. Sorry, I missed the last couple minutes here, Grant.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just referencing back to the fact that we're making a bunch of assumptions, that the more information you get, the more you realize your assumptions aren't right. I mean, just very simple ones, like the idea that we don't really realize, like the idea of the electron, the quantum electron idea was not until 1911 or something, when they discovered that it didn't rotate around like planets and stuff like that. When we made these discoveries, we assumed it was like electrons embedded into a positive field and stuff like that. And then they did the gold foil experiment and went, holy shit, that's not what's going on. And that's the thing, is the more we do experiments, the more we realize that we don't have it right, that we are making mistakes, we're assuming things and just going along with the story, which is what you see in the United States with the political stuff, is you have people totally divided on stories. The people just go along with whatever story they have, whatever news network they're tuning in, and they believe that story. And it's hard to move people off the story.
Well, I know. Isn't that what did that one guy with all the sayings say, that it's easy to fool people, but almost impossible to convince them they have been fooled?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark Twain said that, right?
Yeah, Mark Twain was good. Yeah, he had some he had some good expressions, Mark Twain. He was ahead of his time, that's for sure.
Okay, so Grant Desta, welcome to the Rob Freeman UFO World Explorer Channel. Mark and I are excited to have you guys on the channel here today. And I guess really one of the first things we want to talk about is your new book that you have out, Contact Modalities. And Grant, maybe we could start with you. Can you tell me how this got started, how you came up with this idea and how you got involved with this?
Okay, well, my story goes back to 2012. And I think you would share this, that a lot of the things that happened to me and happened to you, you didn't plan them. I didn't plan to have a UFO sighting. I didn't plan to have this download experience in 2012. So what happened was, in 1975, I have the sighting. Then I have the second sighting. And the second night, I'm looking at it and I'm going, what is this thing? It was so amazing, but I'm going, what's going on here? What's the answer to this thing? And so I spent all these years and I tried to find the highest level person I could find who might have an answer. So I went after the Canadian government, former president of Penn State University, the president of the United States, CIA people and stuff like that. And I guess I really wasn't, I mean, like everybody else, I'm just sort of spinning my wheels and waiting. You think the government's got all the answers and they're going to uncover. And then I go to this lecture by Colin Anders. And again, I'm not interested in crop circles. I have no interest whatsoever. I only went because he was a highly prominent person in the UFO field. And there was this big controversy where he had said 80% of them are hoaxed. And I wanted to go in and see this controversy, how he was going to address this. And that's when I have this download experience where it basically says to me, it's like I'm talking to God. It basically says the answer to that question in 1975, you want to know what's going on? It's consciousness. This is the basic. And all these pieces came together. And it was like I was talking to God. I knew for a fact this is how it worked. So I sort of started to chase this. And I thought, you know, if I had this sort of download experience, I wonder if somebody else has had it. So I started to look. And the first thing I think I came across was Paul McCartney's the song Yesterday. Came in the middle of the night. He wakes up and the song is in his head. And he quickly, there's a piano in the room and he records it. And then he basically runs around for a couple of months and asks people, have you ever heard this song before? Because he was sure someone else had played the song and he just was hearing it. And so then I started to realize there was all these other people getting these download experiences. And that's where the idea for the modalities, and I started to realize like a lot of people are claiming, even we'll get into Destas, but a lot of people are claiming that they have this interaction where they sort of get in this field. And so the basic concept I'd already developed was if there's no time and space, then, and you hear 40% of all people who have had near-death experience, no, 31% of all people who've had near-death experiences, 40% of all people who've had UFO contact experiences say at one point during their experience, they knew the answer to everything in the universe. So the concept is there's no time and space. There's just a field of consciousness and you can get into this field and get the material and bring it back because I had done it. And that's how it started with me. So Ray Hernandez, it had a week after my experience in 2012, Ray Hernandez had his experience with the dog where he gets woken up. And then a couple of weeks after that, Chris Bledsoe has his experience. These all happened at the same time. And Ray Hernandez had the experience. He says, consciousness is involved. I need to know what's going on. So I said, well, I'm going to be in Sebring, Florida lecturing. Come to the lecture and we'll talk about consciousness. And then we can talk about what you think is going on in your sightings and stuff like that. Because he was just losing it. He was only sleeping two hours a night and stuff like that. And so he came and then 2 days later, he has the experience where he's on the Miami freeway near the airport. He's completely stalled. He's listening to NPR radio. And he said, suddenly he's out of his body and he's up above and they're showing him a wheel with these images on the wheel. And it basically one's remote viewing, one's psychic phenomena, one's quantum physics, one's, you know, consciousness, and consciousness is in the middle. And the beings, whoever he's talking to say, you have to quit parsing this stuff. It's all the same thing. And when I heard that story, I said, well, I've already sort of come to this conclusion. So then what happened was Ray wanted me to write an article for the second book. And then I never got around to it. And then I said, I got to get this going. Ray's waiting for this article. I better get going. So what I'll do is I'll just list all the modalities I can think of, all the different ways people claim to get in the field. And it came like 70 some items. And that's when I started putting it together. And then because a lot of them I haven't done, Desta has actually done a lot more than me. I've just had the one type of modality that I use. No, I guess maybe three modalities I use, but Desta has done all these. So a lot of the book was Desta putting in all the stuff because she'd studied this stuff all her life and she does all different types of modalities. So between the two of us, we put together all these modalities and at 400 pages, we basically said, it's getting too long. We got to cut it down. We could have gone another 400 pages. So that's how it basically happened.
Cool. And Destin, could you give us your take? Did Grant approach you, or how did this all come about from your side?
Just this book. Well, I helped Grant publish a lot of his books. So I think he just, I don't even remember how I got involved in it. But I remember when he started talking about things and getting in the field and stuff, I was channeling at the time quite often. So it was very obvious to both of us that we were going to include like the meditation and channeling. And then my grandma used to do stuff and like mediumship stuff in the basement, hold seances in the basement and stuff. And she had seen Charlie Red Star as well, the same year that Grant saw it, in Winnipeg though, and as well at the lake. And so, you know, I knew about a lot of that other kind of stuff. So it was easy for me to say, you know, tarot cards is also a way, and dowsing, I am a dowser, that all these things are, you know, healing stuff, Reiki and all this kind of stuff is the same thing. It's like accessing the field. Maybe people didn't used to think about it before, but the more that we kept talking about it, the more it was very obvious that it was these trance-like states that you need to access to be to get to the field and to actually pull this information out. So it was very exciting. I think we worked on the book for 2 years. It's the longest book that we've ever worked on. Grant can push out a book in like a couple month, maybe. He's a very prolific writer, but it took us a long time because he was trying to get all the studies, the proper brain studies and everything. And I was trying to just like think of more and more chanting and drumming and oming and CE5s. And, you know, it was very fun trying to compile it, as well as looking back in a long time ago for like when the Ouija board came out, when the sisters started like hearing the raps on the wall, and John Dee and his holy board, and, you know, things that were going on for years and, you know, since the 1500s, basically, of people trying to get in the field to talk to their angels or, you know, the other side or whatever. So it was
great. And what's your favorite part of the book? Every author's got a favorite part.
Grant?
Wow. I have to think about it. I had the two. The two chapters had the one guy, his name is Mark out of LA. He's never released his last name, but he had two that I found fascinating. I had to talk him into it. He didn't want to be part of it. And I said, you don't have to use your name, but I need your stories. And he was doing float tanks, and he had it to the position where he would do the float tank. He was under stress, which is a part of the contact modality thing, is that trauma is a big part of this thing. That's a lot of people who've gone under a severe trauma can somehow pop into the field, and they are able to do it. So his father had died, and he was very involved in this whole thing. And he started this float tank thing, and he had it so good in getting messages. They were giving, driving down the LA freeway, he'd say, can you at least wait till I get in the tank before you start talking? So I got that one. That's the same thing. That's this, where the idea of contact modalities is what you're trying to do is the signal is there for everybody. It's no different. It's the ability to turn off the noise to get the signal. So he had this thing, and he was using a float tank. And then he had the one with his father, which is a fascinating story. And one of the biggest contact modalities, of course, is talking to dead people. And I use his one story for the dead people thing. And he has this experience. His father, they're big business people. They do stock trading and stuff like that in LA. And he's going to the corporation papers. His father died, and he's in the house trying to get the corporation papers and file the final taxes and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden his father starts talking to him. And he's freaking out, and he's going like, what is going on here? And leave me alone. I've got to do this. What are you bugging me for? And his father's telling him, go in this drawer. And he's trying to get something for the granddaughter. And there's this story of this crystal, this bluish Swarovski crystal, giant crystal that the father wanted to give to the grand. And he's telling Mark, it's in the drawer. What do you mean drawer? There's 100 drawers. It's just these kind of stories just fascinated me. And I talked him into it. So we put those stories, and then Desta's is a good one, because when Desta first started, that's when we met. When Desta started saying that she was having these experiences, I'd say, really? Okay, ask them this, ask them that. And it was the idea that if you get these people, then that's how you get the answers. The answer's there. And if you can find someone who can get in the field and get you the answer, it's a shortcut to figuring out what's going on. So Desta's was a big one in terms of the two books that she wrote in terms of channeling and stuff like that. That fascinated me.
Cool. Now, is this book out? Like, you can buy it on Amazon right now?
Are you talking contact modalities?
Yes.
Yeah, Contact Modalities. It's one of the bigger books. I've had two books that really took off. Contact Modalities has taken off. A lot of experiencer groups apparently are using the book because they've all got the same thing. Because you know that once you get into like the UFO field, then suddenly it's not just UFOs. Suddenly you have ghosts, you have paranormal stuff. And all these people know. They're looking at all these different modalities. And that's what we say is that they're all connected. And, you know, even the idea of, I remember asking Yvonne Smith, who did all the regressions on the abductee people. I said to her at one point, I said, Yvonne, so how many UFO abductees have got paranormal events? And she started laughing. She goes, like, 99%. It's like, and that was the thing. It was like, it follows these people around. And you realize that these people have sort of ripped the veil or whatever it is. And it's like Desta has all sorts of modalities. She's using them all the time. Whereas I only have sort of the couple that I use. And so I realized that this was extremely important to talk to these people that if they actually are in the field. And that's the other thing where I think we did the ones with the savants, where you actually have the savants where George Finn, I think his name is, they'd ask him, George, what's 2 times 3? And he'd go, would that be 7? And they go, no, it's not 7. And then they say, what day is in the year 1, the third Wednesday in March, what day would that be? He said, oh, that would be on the 17th, and that's a Thursday. And he'd be right every single time. So that's the question is, where's that stuff coming from? And because Desta was doing this kind of stuff, I realized that the information that comes from the field is 100% accurate. And if you can get these savants, they'll never miss it. You can give any date you want. Prime numbers, they're fascinated with prime numbers, 5, 6, 7-digit prime numbers. And that's the key, is that the information appears, if there's no time and space, then everything past, present, and future is in the field. And it's the ability to access it, which is the whole idea behind the modalities.
Okay. Desta, now, in regards to all these different modalities, are there certain ones that really apply to the UFO field, or do they all?
To the UFO field, well, to the consciousness aspect behind them all, I think is exactly the same, right? Because it's accessing the field. And as long as you're in this meditative or trance-like state, just like the C5 state that people, whether they're oming like Ricardo's groups or whatever, or Greer's groups, you know, doing the Vedic chants first, or people just meditating, or, and now that we're talking about, Grant was just talking about earlier, is it us manifesting it? And we're also wondering if that's part of it. So if it's us manifesting it, maybe it's the more cohesive, like Greer would say that too, right? The more cohesive the group is, the more likely it is you're going to see something. And Ricardo would say that as well. If there's a couple of people that aren't meditating, that are walking around or being, I don't know, whatever, like just like aren't really into it, and then they won't come. And we just talked about this earlier too, as Ricardo said at one point when we were in Crestone, actually at one of Paula's events, he knew right away. He just said, the group isn't ready, they're not coming tonight. And he didn't close up shop kind of thing, like we still sat there for the whole night and did the meditation, but he told us, you know, at the beginning of the night, like they're not coming. And so maybe it is because that's what we're doing, is we're manifesting it. So whether it's you need to get into the state, the proper meditative or trance-like state to be able to access the field and get the information, or whether you need to get into that state to be able to create it and to manifest it. And the more cohesive the group is, because the more everyone, like the Philip experiment, the more that everyone is singing and really wanting and trying to manifest, and the intent is the exact same at the same time, is it a collective manifestation of what's happening? Or is it just because everyone has to get in the field at the same time, and then that makes the group more cohesive too? Is the same thing. So for the stuff that I do, you know, I don't know what is more linked to the UFO stuff. I think it's all just whatever this is that we still obviously don't know. It's like, however it is that you're getting closer to that state where you can pull the things in more, it is whether you're dowsing or doing long distance healing or any of these modalities. I think it really just depends on your brain wave state, or like your mind level, basically. Rob has disappeared.
Well, are you taping too? So we'll have it.
Yes.
We can just keep going. You can give him the tape.
Yeah, because Mark's taping too. But maybe Mark should tell us then, in case Rob takes a sec to come back. Why don't you start telling us about your documentary?
pretty exciting. As you know, Rob and I have been around the world, you know, well, 14 countries over the last 6 years. We're entering our seventh year. So the first documentary was split into four parts, Making Contact North America, Making Contact Europe, Australia, and Peru. So we ended up doing two different licensing opportunities. We did, it'll come out on Tubi at some point this summer. But before that, Sci-Fi Central, fairly large YouTube channel, picked up non-exclusive rights to it. So we're excited. It's been out for a week. It's already gotten over 13,000 views. And it's a documentary. It's a 90-minute documentary. But that's exciting for us. I mean, to have an audience of, you know, 13,000 watch it, and the comments have been great. And Sci-Fi is excited for, because it's only 2015 and 16, you know, and we've been doing this up till 21. So there'll be, gosh, I think we're going to have at least another 8 to 12 episodes that will, including what we did with you two, and, you know, they'll continue to kind of roll out there. And for the audience, it's pretty exciting. Yeah, it's pretty exciting to have that audience, to have the feedback. People get it. They're understanding what this is about, that it's about one man's journey and, you know, the experience that Rob had when he was younger, how it affected him, you know, for 55 years, and how it just became his mission to get out there and find truths, if there were truths to be found, and meet people, you know, other, you know, ordinary people experiencing the extraordinary, and how that all kind of ties into his own personal journey. And the coolest comments, I would say, come in is that it's really seen as an alternative piece of work, as far as, as you know, Rob and I are not, you know, cliche, and I don't mean to sound cliche, but we're not UFO hunters. You know, we're more for experiencing, you know, finding out all kinds of experiences, and wherever the journey takes us, right?
Have you seen the media take on the field change over the last number of years, maybe since the New York Times article, or is it shifting the way we sort of, because, you know, sometimes we're blind. We think everybody sees UFOs the same way as we do. But if you're talking to media people, they would have a sense of, is this much more popular now, or more acceptable, easier to sell to Hollywood or to a network?
More accessible, for sure. You know, I go on TV, for example, and I type in UFO, and it's all conspiracy. Well, it used to be. This is the point I'm making, is even 6 months ago, a lot of it was, and I've seen a lot of new material come on the show, on the channel. And 6 months ago, it was a lot of conspiracy, you know, UFO, the dark history, you know, it seemed to be, I don't know, I don't mean to say camp fear and camp love, but it's kind of like there was a lot of fear factor built into it, you know, scary aliens, scary UFOs. The dramatic music for both of those, you know, make it very much like that. Where now I'm noticing it's more human interest. It's more accepted. It's not fringe science as much anymore. It's not pseudoscience. These are real people having real experiences. Programs are starting to come out that are giving people that voice. You know, they're getting the chance to have that voice and talk about their experiences without the shaming, I guess. I mean, I hate to, but there seems to be a level of that. So yeah, I think that, you know, Rob and I have had these talks. It's funny that he's not here right now. so funny. Sorry. Rob and I have had these talks where it's like, now people can have real conversations that, you know, I'm not saying that conversations haven't existed. I mean, Grant, you've been, I mean, such a big part of your life since you were young. Same with you, Desta, you know, you dedicated so much of your life and time to it, but it depends on the circle you're in, you know, at some level, like who will listen to you. Like, I remember when I got into it, my son, you know, he's 24 now, 25. My daughters, you know, oh dad, you know, UFOs, you know, very fantasy, you know, very, very out there stuff. And now when I post something on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, it's like, wow, that's cool. Like now it's cool. Younger generation is becoming cool. I'm a good friend of mine who's got a 16, 17 year old son who started to talk about consciousness and energy. And it kind of feels like a recalibrating of that kind of material, you know? So maybe that's, I think that's amazing. I mean, I just think it could now maybe even get studied, you know, at a higher level. When you have these reports come out, scientists are talking about it, experts are talking about it in the field that have not been given that chance to really be open about it. I mean, maybe it could get the next generation excited.
Have you moved towards that yourself? Like in terms of, because you and I have had this discussion before about, you know, the value of a UFO sighting, that you see something, you put it up and people go, that's pretty cool or whatever. But the conversation is sort of moving now to what's really going on, you know, this idea about the observer effect and what are we really dealing with. Have you moved into that yourself, or are we still a little bit stuck in the media world in terms of things that I call them the dancing bears, where people just want to see weird stuff on camera?
Well, I'm trying to call him here. 1 second.
Okay.
He's having quite an anomaly. Hey, Rob. Yeah. So you're converting the first part, eh?
Well, crazy enough.
Yeah, you can't log back on because it makes you convert if you were taping, right? So you can't jump on to another meeting right away.
We're just talking about you.
Yeah, we're going to talk about him for a while.
Yeah, without him here.
It's just
we can always do another one. We're kind of free, and if you want to finish up today, and then we'll do another one, but.
It's interesting. The question again, Grant, was please repeat it.
Yeah, the idea of the shift, like we've sort of made the shift to talking about consciousness and what's really going on and stuff like that. But sometimes I find that, and you've had a discussion about the value of a UFO photograph in terms of, is that still a big thing that sells it, that you just want to see something really weird on film? And that's the problem, I guess, we get in UFOs, is if somebody's really good at CGI, then it's like, let's see if we can get people on this UFO thing and show something very, is the media still into that thing where that kind of stuff sells, or even the evil alien stuff? I know there was a story of Chris Bledsoe where DeLong had offered him all this money, production money for his thing, but he wanted to put reptilians in at the end. And Chris said, no, we're not putting reptilians in here. And so that's the question.
Well, we kind of experienced that a couple of years ago. We had Travel Channel came to us. They liked the fact we've been to many different countries. They wrote us a nice letter. It was a really nice thing. All the stuff's really amazing. You know, how do you feel about going more Fear Factor, scary, doing this kind of thing? Rob and I felt instantly that's a sellout. You know, that's not the experience we're having. That's not what we're experiencing in the field. We're not saying that people haven't had their own experiences. Yeah. None of that way, go for it. But we personally, like when we post things on the channel, like on the YouTube, the UFO World Explorer channel, I watch those analytics, what are people looking at and getting excited about when we post a video? And you're right. Most of the time, if we posted one video with Ricardo Gonzalez and a picture of Antarel, which you know of as well, Grant,
yeah.
And 4,000 views, which is a big hit on the channel, right?
Yeah.
Because you're posting a picture of an extraterrestrial and you're playing with the title. I mean, it's but it's at a level of clickbait, right? Where and that becomes a big thing. Where we'll post something else, a fantastic interview with, someone talking about, doing full research on other things or talking really big topics, and you get 300 or 400.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.